The game and the world and the art inform radically what you're going to do if you're doing a retro thing. It's, you know, you may want to start looking at chiptune stuff. But on the other hand, you could go completely the other direction and do, you know, a weird all-vocal thing and then just be strange. But you have to make that decision. And a lot of times, I always feel like it's informed by the art. And, you know, when we did Fossil Echo, seeing the art for the first time told me exactly what I wanted to do with the score. And I tend to approach things naturally from a more, if not orchestral, then acoustic perspective. And so I tend to think in terms of what kind of real sounds, what kind of real instruments or percussive effects can be eked out of physical objects, and that's kind of the thing. So it's always like the game informs the sound that you go with. At least that's my perspective on it.
That's super cool. Well, I'm just going to drop this in because this is already a super interesting conversation. This is Music Respawn from GDC. I'm Kate Remington, and I'm talking with John Robert Matz, and it is fabulous to catch up with you. And first of all, congratulations for your Gang Awards last night for Best Interactive Score for Fossil Echo and Rookie of the Year. My goodness.
Yeah, I don't even, wow, I'm still stunned and incredibly honored and incredibly flattered that my fellow game audio professionals, my colleagues and friends would give me this tremendous honor. It's one of those things that, like, when I first started doing game audio a few years ago, I dreamed that maybe this would be a thing, that something might happen, I'm very good at, you know, delaying gratification and not, like, giving in to, like hope or getting my hopes up on stuff, because you get disappointed or whatnot. And I was absolutely blown away to find out that I won. I mean, my colleagues and just turned in. This has been a fantastic year for video game music, and to be recognized amongst such other amazing scores, it was just stunning. I'm flabbergasted, really.
What was so interesting to me, seeing the competition up there, is that now there's such a level playing field between indie games and AAA games as far as the music is concerned. So it seems like it's just a fantastic time to be a game composer, whether you're working for a AAA studio or an indie.
Yeah, absolutely. When we were up against Uncharted and Overwatch and things that have, like, massive budgets and wonderful composers who've been doing this for years and who I look up to as idols and things to aspire to. And here am I kind of putting mine together in my basement, playing all these instruments myself and, you know, mixing in real things with samples and, you know, getting, you know, a good friend to play, you know, to take the time out of her day to play violin for me, you know, to give it that one last bit of extra wonder. It really does. I guess it shows that, like, I don't know, at the risk of, like, making myself sound amazing or something like that, I guess it shows that in the end, if you can tap into that creative spirit or that creative aspect to do something new, that will kind of shine through and can kind of transcend financial or technical limitations. If you look at classic video game scores, you know, you look at the Final Fantasies, you look at Koji Kondo's work, you look at all this stuff, they made amazing music and they had no orchestras, they had no complex sample playback engines, amazing synthesizers, they had like four channels and one was noise, you know. I mean, and you could do amazing things with that, and you had to share that with your sound, but they still made that iconic and unique and amazing. And I think we're maybe coming back around to that in some way, insofar as you can do amazing things even without a huge budget, even without massive kind of support in place. And, in the end, I guess, pour your heart and soul into it and hope what comes out is appreciated.
Well, clearly it was last night, which is fantastic. The thing that really struck me about your music for Fossil Echo is the sense of mystery, and clearly that's a big part of the game. But when you were brought in to do the score, what was it that attracted you to the game?
Like I said, everything kind of spins out of the game and out of visuals. And so the first thing I saw was like a tiny bit of animation from very early in the game, and I think it was If you played the game, spoilers, for the first 3 seconds, you start on the sea and you have a small boat and a small boy and you paddle forward and you arrive at like this sandy beach and there's a sheer cliff face and a little torch burning and little fireflies and it's all foggy and very mysterious. And then I saw, you know, some little bits of screenshots from later in the game and just kind of getting an idea of this visual world, and it's haunting and vibrant and colorful and mysterious in equal measure. And all that stuff kind of, it wasn't, all that stuff really kind of spoke to me at the risk of sounding like a cliche. It was an incredibly unique take on a world. It wasn't your traditional fantasy world. It wasn't a very Western fantasy world even. The developers are from New Caledonia, which is a small French colony island in the South Pacific between Australia and New Zealand, if I'm not mistaken. And they grew up there, and they moved to France to go to university, but they had such an interesting, it's got such interesting cultural aspects to it, and they kind of wove that into the world. And so all of this stuff kind of comes together. They're from France, they have this very French artistic style, but they're depicting things that are pulled from that kind of almost Asian kind of South Pacific kind of interesting aspects of the world, and that kind of appears in this unique fantasy world that isn't our world and isn't any specific place, and kind of feels out of time. And so all that stuff kind of comes together and just, and results in a score that you describe as kind of having this mystery, this sense of wonder about it. And that's kind of what I tried to weave into my writing.
The palette and the instrumentation is so interesting because there's the marimba in there that kind of, to me, reminded me of Robin Miller's music for Riven, with that same sort of kind of, I don't know, just very, it's a different color than you usually hear in games. And I'm wondering how you developed the palette and the instrumentation.
Fossil Echo has a very, interesting kind of arrangement of instruments. There is a traditional kind of orchestra in there. They're most of it is sampled. Some of it is real. Strings and brass and percussion. Most of the percussion is where the weird stuff comes in. So there are drums from, talking from the big stuff down, we have a little bit of taiko stuff, we have a little bit of surdo drums, we have very, most of these are samples, but there's some Irish percussion, that I kind of wove in, some tambourine, some weird extra things here mixed in. A lot of very strange ethnic, just labeled as ethnic chimes and shakers and things like that from India and various places around Asia, kind of woven in some clacks of bamboo and snaps and pine and various percussive aspects that are not generally Western orchestral, and those kind of things put us in a different place. And then on top of that, the pitched percussion, things like marimba, as was mentioned, which, is a Western kind of thing, but doesn't come out of the Western tradition originally, as well as kalimba, which is a thumb piano from Africa originally. Hurts like heck to play it, but you get calluses eventually. Some of the kalimba was real, some of it was sampled, and a bunch of strange, lyre instruments, dulcimers, hammered dulcimers, weird little detuned, battered auto harp that does not work properly, but boy, can make cool sounds, and then all the woodwinds, which are kind of the thing that are my actual voice on the album, insofar as I don't have Japanese or Chinese woodwinds or anything of that sort. Instead, I've got recorders from Germany and, made of wood, and I have Irish flutes and whistles and tin whistles, and I'm playing them all wrong, and that's the best part about it. It's like, take these Western instruments and play them in imitation of, what I think of as Asian kind of styles in some ways. But the nice thing about playing in a world that is not a real place or is not our world means you can get away with so much, and I didn't want to ever have it sound like any definite one thing. And so I'm doing weird stuff like playing alto recorder and then, shadowing it with a pitch shifted version down 7 half steps, and then you get a weird lower undertone almost of it, or you know, or shifting it down a full octave and having like it feel like there's a fundamental pitch lower than that, and it adds this weird ethereal sound to it, and those things worked out incredibly well, I think. And then on top of that, I wove in some vocal stuff here and there, I wanted to again not make it sound super traditional, but I wound up I'm a classical tenor by day. I teach private voice lessons at a high school, and I sing a lot. I wound up singing on this thing, but not in normal ways. I sang falsetto countertenor stuff and tried to do my best boy soprano impression. wrote out little things in Latin and then warped them a bit so they didn't sound quite like Latin, made them a bit more interesting and angular, and they all actually, if you play through the game, you spoilers, there are these temples that you encounter, and at the end of every temple there's a mural that you reveal, and there's a little bit of text for each one that is in this fake warped language that I created that kind of refers to something about the plot, and I don't want to ruin anything else, and so those little things get woven in, and then there's some like low humming for a certain character that I kind of baked in to kind of make it this warm sound that to make you feel comforted in some way, and so lots of weird different sounds that are not what you normally expect in a game, I guess, all coming together to make what I hope is a very unique instrumental palette.
This month, we're asking you to tell a friend about a podcast you think they'll love. Right now, think of a friend, your mom, anyone you care about. What podcast would they really love? Now, tell them about it in real life or on social media. And if they don't know about podcasts, well, show them how podcasts work. Tell us what you recommend with the hashtag Tripod, TRYPOD. Thanks for spreading the word. The scope of your music absolutely fits the scope of the game, too, because it's a very, it's not an epic game, it's not Skyrim, but because it's such an interesting world, and it's a wordless world, so the music is really essential.
Yeah, the whole wordless aspect of it was a huge thing. It was, the game has no text, it has no dialogue. There are voice actors who did an amazing job going, et cetera, and making little sounds that then work. We used in the game and to, I think, great effect. Just kudos to our voice actors. Gordon McGlattery did a lot of work with them, and then they did just some amazing things to make that happen. But the game has no text. There's no written story. There aren't even button press prompts in the game. We actually had them in early versions and took them out because we wanted to have this pure animated kind of style. Like we wanted you to, it has one button and a control stick, and everything else comes out of those mechanics. And so we were like, we don't really need button prompts if you can figure it out on your own. And so we work to kind of make it streamlined. It means that the difficulty curve is a little steep, but...
Yeah, it is. I really struggled.
Sorry about that. It is a little steep, but we wanted to kind of... It is very much an artistic choice, I guess, you might say. And so sans words and sans... And sans text of any sort, sans dialogue, the music becomes the voice of the characters. And that was one of our kind of core tenets as we went through this thing. We wanted to have a story that was carried by the music, but also characters who were voiced by the music. And so led me to, I guess, do a little bit of that classic Wagnerian leitmotif kind of stuff. Like, the boy has a theme, the island has a theme, the tower has a theme, the threats along the way, they have a specific like motif associated with them. Different locations have themes that kind of come in, but over which, you know, the character themes are woven. In cutscenes, you know, we kind of have those aspects tied to people and places, and, you know, giving them that voice. And so it was a real challenge to do, but it was a real joy to kind of bring that stuff together in hopefully a congruent way.
Well, yeah, and the award that you were given for Best Interactive Score, how did you work out how the music was going to work in the game? Was that in your wheelhouse, or was that up to the programmers? Or?
This may take a second. Let's go back a bit here. Originally, the game was going to have no audio middleware whatsoever. Those of you listening who know audio, you know what I'm talking about. But otherwise, let me back up even a bit further. Audio middleware is... it can be first party, you can build it yourself, or you can, there are several major companies that do, that make this their career, their world, their job, to make software that is designed to connect between the audio programmers, the audio designer, sound designer, composer, etc., and the game engine. And basically, the game engine has hooks, and the audio engine has hooks, the audio middleware has hooks, and they connect, and then the game says, play this thing, and the audio middleware plays the thing. And it can get very sophisticated, or it can be very simple. It can be just little calls. It can be, you can do elaborate mixing in it. You can do elaborate interactive audio, music and sound design and whatnot. And almost every AAA game uses that sort of stuff. Indies, sometimes, in this case, we started off with no audio middleware whatsoever, and everything I designed was with very... I had a very strict kind of like idea in mind of like, I can't do anything super sophisticated because I can't do super interactive music. I hadn't learned how to do audio middleware, how to run it properly, how to mess with it. We used FMod in the end, but I didn't know anything about this stuff. It was very daunting, and I was like, oh, I don't know about this. At the time, the team wasn't really keen to go down that route. But I was intrigued by it. And then having come to GDC for the first time and seen some amazing talks, Guy Whitmore breaking down his stuff for Peggle and some other things just blew me away. I realized suddenly what you could do with a very sophisticated interactive music system. And when we brought Gordon McGlattery and A Shell in the Pit Audio on the team to do sound design, he and I are good friends, and we were able to convince the team to go down the route of audio middleware, and we wound up going with FMOD, which is one of the two big ones. FMOD and WISE is not an endorsement of one or the other. They do very different. They do the same thing in different ways, and they are very, very good for what they do. Suddenly I had this control, basically, and I could kind of, and I've been working with our programmer, Terry Bura, who is a wizard. We had two people making everything that wasn't audio. I mean, Phil Grafo, our artist and designer, and Terry, our programmer, coder. And he was doing amazing stuff with what I'd given him. But suddenly I made his job much easier, and I took on this extra level of control. And so the best thing about it was the stuff I'd been writing was designed to be very flexible already, because you know, it couldn't have the complex level of sophisticated interaction that I ideally wanted, and suddenly I know it's now given this extra level of control, and I could start to make that function. And so I'd written cues to be like, this will just play until this interrupts it, but now I could very carefully decide when these things would cue in, when these things would interrupt, and make it fall on the beat, or whatever else I might want to do, and it suddenly gave me this extra level of control. And there's a sequence later in the game, which is the big, you know, interactive bit. I mean, there are other bits where, like, there's multiple layers of music that fade in and out when you're in certain places, and those were challenging and entertaining to do, and super, super glad how they turned out. But there's this bit later in the game, which was the bane of my existence, and a wonder that it came out as well as it did, and it's kind of my, I guess, it's the dramatic high point, the crowning point of the game, so I'm not going to spoil too much here, but it's, we call it the ladder sequence, and basically the player character climbs a ladder, and that's basically the only instructions I was given. And I was asked to write the sequence first, before there was anything in the game. And I was told, like, there'll be things that you'll see along the way in the ladder, but I'm going to draw it after you write the music. And we'll time it so that the cool stuff happens at, like, the cool points in the music. And so we wanted basically this ascending sense of wonder and grandeur until we meet a dramatic high point, and we climax on this ladder climb. And so I wrote a 2.5, almost 3-minute cue, you know, just linearly, just straight through, and gave that to Phil. And he built the level around that. And then I had to go back and make it function as an interactive piece of audio, as an interactive experience. And basically, I fell back on my music theater experience at this point. I did a lot of music theater growing up. I knew about, you know, I had learned a lot about vamps and repeats, and I had this idea that, like, I'll slice this up into sections, discrete sections. I'll write sections that will vamp, that will vamp, by the way, I'm saying this weird, and maybe you don't get it, maybe you don't know what that means, but it is basically a section in usually a musical or an opera or underscore for a play or something like that, where you repeat it ad nauseum until the actors on stage are ready to go on. So you might have a vamp, and then you wait for a singer to come in, and as soon as they come in, you're moving on. You know, that's when you go on. And so I wrote this with these ideas of vamping sections, and designed it so that if the player's not advancing along this linear path, you know, they have to move pretty much in one direction. If they're not advancing along this linear path, the music will relax down to stasis. I called it this relaxed, you know, like, we're holding, we're not doing anything, just calm down. You know, if the player sets their controller down and walks away, we don't want the music to just keep getting more and more exciting, and they're just standing there. So I designed the system so you have these multiple spots, and it'll loop back on itself to buy more time if the player hesitates or wants to check something out. And so it's always constantly building as you ascend. And it was it was a true headache to make work. But it was incredibly gratifying to see it function in the game in the end. And the best thing is, like, it's all driven by, you know, one control, and it's progress. And so our programmer, all he had to do was, in the end, you know, figure out where we wanted to, like, set progress, yes or no, and that was it. And if we are making progress, then great. If not, the music will automatically relax or repeat, you know, as required. And it's very, It was a nightmare to put together, but man, it worked really well in the end. I'm very proud of that.
That is a great breakdown of how music works in a game, and in this game in particular. And you'd mentioned that you didn't have a console growing up and you didn't really play games. So what kind of was the spark that said, you know what, I need to start playing games?
Well, so I did have no console growing up, but I had a PC. My parents would not spring for... Technically, I had a Texas Instruments... unit that plugged into our television.
I had one of those too.
It was ancient when I got it. This is the trend, by the way. My history is full of games and hardware that are a good generation behind of what I should have, for my age. But so I had this Texas Instruments machine, and I played games on it. I dreaded Hunt the Wumpus. It was a horrible nightmare. But that was our game console growing up. That wasn't really anything big, and I used to have the opportunity to, when I was a kid, to either get a bedtime story or play on my dad's IBM XT, I would paint, or I would learn BASIC and start to mess with that. And that was like, you could do this or this, and these are your choices, son, and we can do this. So I did that. I messed around with that a bit, and eventually, I go to friends' houses and play Nintendo NES and be horribly crushed and fail miserably. I had no practice. What was I going to do? Eventually, I convinced my parents to, or we decided it was time to get a computer, because we couldn't justify a console. That was a waste of whatever. But you could run educational games on a computer. You could type essays on a computer. And so we got a 4060GX266 with a math coprocessor and everything. And that was my first kind of gaming machine. And so but of course, at the time, the Pentiums are starting to come out very shortly after that. And so we're, of course, still behind the times. And so I was looking at games that would run on this machine. And so I was playing games from 2 or 3 years ago, a lot of older games and used games, and delving into that stuff. And we kind of eventually crept up, but we can never really justify getting a console. And so I became very much a PC gamer, I guess. And I experienced a lot of LucasArts adventures and Monkey Island.
Those were fabulous, yeah. Though. We played those too, Pit Droids and Pod Racing and stuff.
It was Sam & Max and Monkey Island and X-Wing and TIE Fighter and X-Wing versus TIE Fighter and Dark Forces and all these wonderful LucasArts. I was a complete nerd, if you haven't noticed, as a kid. Playing all these LucasArts games and playing a whole bunch of other stuff. And really the thing that kind of hooked me in the end, or gave me this crazy idea that video game music could be a real thing, was the score for a game called Outcast. I'm forgetting the publisher, but I do remember some other stuff about it. It was this very interesting voxel-based third-person action-adventure set in an alien world. It was that you got to by a Stargate kind of thing. Your protagonist was Cutter Slade, who is an ex-Navy SEAL and super wry sense of humor, surprisingly, and witty writing and a magnificent, strange and interesting world with a score That was the first one I'd ever heard recorded by live orchestra. It was written by Lenny Moore, who is, I'm incredibly pleased to call a friend now. And man, meeting him for the first time, I was like, you know, geeked out. But recorded with the Moscow Symphony Orchestra and Chorus. It's a phenomenal, amazing piece of work. It is gritty and primitive and wonderful, and there's choir and orchestra, and it blows you out of the water every time. It blows me out of the water every time I heard it. And suddenly I was like, video game music, I mean, at the risk of sounding like the most cliched person in the world, you know, can be more than just, you know, MIDI and beeps and synthesizers and not great samples and, you know, whatnot. We could take it beyond that, and yes, it wasn't amazingly interactive because they were, you know, confined by the tech of the time. But, you know, suddenly you could write music like you would for a film or like you'd write for the concert hall. I grew up on operas and musicals and symphonies and you know, and jazz and all sorts of other stuff, and I'm used to hearing those sounds, you know, but then I play a game and I'm, you know, it takes me out of it when I'm hearing, you know, or it took me out of it as a kid, you know, when I'm hearing, you know, my Sound Blaster struggle to do, you know, to do General MIDI, you know, et cetera, you know, and so getting that extra, you know, suddenly symphonic treatments suddenly made me go, well, I've been playing in bands and orchestras and stuff all my life. I've been dabbling and arranging in high school and composition and stuff. Maybe I could be a composer. Maybe I could write music for video games. This is my sound, or the sound I want to have, you know, maybe someday. And that's kind of been the thing that sparked me.
That's so cool. And so I guess, I don't know, we can say the rest is history. And I'm just so, so pleased that you were given those awards last night. And congratulations once again. And it's been fantastic to talk to you.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me on. Love your program. It is wonderful to have the world of game music treated with the same kind of gravitas that you get for film and for classical music and other musical art forms. And thank you so much for doing that.